Well, what I'll say is the best investment you make is one in yourself. So that's you're always going to be your best investment, especially an entrepreneur.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Are you spending too much money on ads? Want to increase your average order value? Are you eyeing that big exit from your business? Or have you been wondering how you can increase your lifetime value, build a community, and basically make more money through customer loyalty and retention? Let us help. Huckleberry Consulting brings over a decade of experience in client and customer success from the world's biggest companies. Let your customers tell you what they want. Visit consulthuckleberry.com to claim your free audit and quit leaving money on the table. Once again, that's consulthuckleberry.com. See you there.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. So times are not very fun right now. I actually read a joke about the economy the other day, and it said, this is not a cream pie economy. And it's just not fun. And also I noticed that a lot of my friends, rich or poor or somewhere in between, everyone's complaining about the same things, grocery prices, things getting more and more expensive, everything from the essentials to the luxury items. So there's definitely a wave coming, or it's actually already here and it's taking us. And we have just ticking us with it, and we just have no choice. So with that said, I invited two of my very good friends on this podcast to discuss what's happening right now and in the economy, and how entrepreneurs can think about it, how they can have the right mindset about it, and also what can they do to protect themselves and help themselves basically while navigating this very special time. So my guests today are Martin and Chelsea Matthews. They are business owners and authors in the financial industry. They're founders of the M Wealth Group, a financial consulting, investment, and insurance agency. They lead a team of professionals with clients in 48 states and with over 27 years combined in the financial industry as award-winning professionals. They focus on helping clients build unbreakable finances in life and in business. Their book, Let's Fight About Money, helps couples communicate about money and handle conflicts. They're also involved in many charitable activities, including Drug Free World, which partners with NFL youth football camps to teach kids and adults the truth about drugs. Oh, that's super nice. So welcome, Martin and Chelsea Matthews. How are you today?
Doing great.
Doing great. Thank
Thanks
you
for
so
having
much
us, Carla.
Happiness.
Yeah. Solid, I say the exact same thing.
Yeah. I know. So, yeah, actually my husband and I haven't done that too. We're still about to do that someday. So I'm going to learn from you, having both of you guys on this podcast, but, so for our listeners, I met Martin and Chelsea, met them online probably 7-8 years ago when I was also starting to get more active in the online space. I've always respected their opinions about money, about money management, and I really, really love their mindset about money. And that's a big thing when you're an entrepreneur. So quick story. Tell me something like individually, tell me something about the moment for you guys when you realized you wanted to be in the financial industry.
Well, I'll go first. It was before I met Martin, and before I met him, I was a single mom for 7 years, and I really struggled to find a balance between financial success and family success. Like, I was either spending time with my son and broke, or I was making money and I wasn't spending any time with him. And I knew there had to be a better way, and I knew if I could figure it out, I could help other moms to do it too. And I also noticed that when my son started school, he was not going to learn the tools to be successful in life. And if I wanted to teach him those tools, then I had to learn them for myself. So I like went on a journey. I read books. I went to seminars. And that's actually how we ended up meeting. There was a group of people, financial advisors, who Martin was partnered with. And when I found out what they were doing, they were teaching people how money works. They were making money doing it. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And so then we ended up combining our business and our life, and then I'll let you tell your part.
I love
And combining our family
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Well, I grew up in Liberia, West Africa. At one point, it was ranked the poorest country in the world. So I grew up in a very interesting environment where there were people with some money and people with no money, and it was very clear. And so every day people used to come to my house and ask my father for money, like, "Hey, can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? My parents are sick. Can you help me?" So it was every day of my life. And I was wondering why is that? Why? I was very curious as a kid. So I was just curious about money because I could see the impact it made. They come to our house to ask for some money. Now my father was a prominent guy, and so he would help them, and he very much liked to help people. And so he'd help them, and I would see like the change. It's like they came in there like almost hopeless. And then he helped them with some money, and now all of a sudden this relief came across their face. And I'm like, there's something with this exchange thing, this money thing. Something's interesting with this thing. Why? What's the deal with it? And then I just thought everybody in America was rich. So when I came to America, I realized that wasn't the case. It's like not everybody in America is rich. Okay. I just thought the movies were all real life stories. And then I got here and I realized, okay, there's still this gap too. People need to learn, they need to understand how to make money, what to do with it once you make it, and how do you expand and grow it and then pass it on to future generations. So that's how I became interested in this as an industry.
Wow, I love that story, and I totally resonate as an immigrant. I only have one question though. Can I still go to your dad's house and ask for some money?
Well, he passed away some years ago, so he ain't there no more. Now they come
Oh,
to
there you go. Yeah, send me the pin and I'll be there. But yeah, great stories, no? And it was super nice that Chelsea met you because she wanted like something more, and she met you, and it was a very inspiring story. And also, I totally believe in dating and marrying your mentors. So I'm right there with you, Chelsea. I also married a man who's smarter than me, and it's the one of the best life hacks ever. I don't know. Chelsea might debate me on that. She might be the smarter one. Don't come for me.
We have our very different skills.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I know that you guys work with a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs, and being an entrepreneur is a special, is such a very special position because it's almost like you have the power to make your own money, but also if you kind of fail at it, it's also kind of your fault, and you feel like it's your fault. So a lot of entrepreneurs now are really getting nervous, and so let's talk about, what is a realistic kind of like entrepreneur-sized emergency fund? Like, if I'm an entrepreneur, I'm starting to get nervous. I want to build my own emergency fund. What is a good size emergency fund? And how can someone build that without like starving their business?
So I would say that it really depends, first of all, of where the business and the person is at. Like, what are their overhead? What are their expenses? Also, their business is funding their household. So what is their household expenses? So it really starts from one of the things that we talk to people about building reserves, and this is so key because the whole pandemic that we just saw and just went through, it's like there was a lot of businesses and people who are high earners, but if they didn't have reserves, they were screwed very quickly. And so it's really important, number one, to develop the habit of setting aside money, especially if you're a business owner, you got to pay taxes, you got to put aside for taxes. But I would start with the goal of getting at least 1 month of expenses in there. And if you're like, if you're not saving in any reserves right now, the first thing is you want to have a separate account that's just for reserves. Don't have it sitting in the checking account with all of your other expense money. So get it in a different account and then decide on a dollar amount or a percentage every time money comes in that you're going to put aside. Mm-hmm. And then, so that way it's the habit. When I first started this, I literally was doing $1. Like when I started this on my own, as I was learning about money, I was putting aside $1 and then $2. And then I built up. And then as business owners, you know, we started putting more and more aside. So have that as a goal to get 1 month and then continue building, because you never know what's going to happen. If somebody got sick or hurt, you lost a key member in your business, somebody passed away, you want to make a change in your business, a pandemic happens. So you want to be able to handle anything. And so it's about setting those targets and then continuing to grow. And once you get to really like a larger size, then there's other things that you could start doing that are more fun that can get your money working for it.
Yeah.
For itself
and
too.
1 month is just a minimal. That's if somebody doesn't have any reserves at all, then you start to build up to that target. And then a common thing is you want to have a quarter of your expenses taken care of. So that's your next target. You got to do things on a gradient. So if you got nothing, no reserves, put that aside, build it to 1 month of operational expenses and household expenses. Then you want to do a quarter, which is 3 months of your operational expenses and your household expenses. A lot of businesses will get, you find yourself in a much solid position to where you can make moves. You're not so stressed if you got a year. So if you keep building, you got a year of your operational expenses for your business and for your household, and you're not adding a bunch of new expenses, then that's a very, very good stable position to be in that you build towards. So have targets and gradient steps towards that.
Yeah, I like that. So basically the concept is the more the better, but if you're starting at zero, of course, you know, get 1 month in, and then work your way towards more. And I guess I would add as another kind of point to that is that I think it also depends on how long your sales process is and how easy can you get your next client, right? Because like, I think in times like this, it's really gonna be like spend less and make more because everything just costs more. So obviously because everything costs more, you know, in that conversation, even household items, not just your processing fees or your software fees, they're not just the only ones getting more expensive, the home stuff as well. What is your advice for entrepreneurs delineating like a home emergency fund and a business emergency fund?
Well, you really got to, it's one of the barriers or one of the things people really got to understand. Your business is separate from you. Even if you're a solo person and it's just you, your business is a completely separate entity than your household. So to the degree you can have more and more separation, bank accounts, all these different things, then you start to have those separately. So one of the things we do is once a week, we go over both the business finances and household finances. Household finances are less complicated because we have a lot of fixed expenses in the household. The business expenses vary. We may spend more on marketing. There's other expenses. There's business trips, all these different things. So once you start to really know what your expenses are, that's really when then you can say, okay, well, on a household, this is how much we get. We pay ourselves generally a fixed amount for a household. All right. And we're like, okay, so we kind of generally fit that within the range. But once a week, we go over. Chelsea is the CFO of the business. So Chelsea's hat is going through, or Chelsea's post job that she's doing is going through once a week, and she goes over everything. She puts together a report, and then we together as an executive team look over the report on all of our expenses, how much money came in, how much money went out, what are all the expenses, what are the costs and different things like that. So we know exactly what the operational expenses are, and then we build a reserves plan around those expenses. And so that's how we keep it very separate. It has to be like different bank accounts, can't co-mingle your funds. And I really try to teach our entrepreneur clients, you really got to look at this business as its own complete other thing. It's its own entity, you know, it's its own thing separate from you.
Got it. Got it. Yeah, I think that's also one of the things that was difficult for me at the start, honestly. And I also had this attitude, bad attitude, of like not looking at my money stuff. For me, it was just like a Pandora's box that I didn't want to face. And for me, I had this principle of, you know what, as long as my bills are paid and I'm having fun and I have enough money to do everything that I want, I'm good. And I'm investing. So I'm good. How do you guys feel about entrepreneurs taking on new investments right now? Like at this particular time, are there, if someone wants to invest, what would be kind of the safer and better investments? And if not, what do you suggest that they do with, like, if they have any extra money or if they want to make extra money, should that just go to the reserves? Like, what do you think?
I'll start and you can add in the
Yeah.
specifics. But this is one of a lot of these answers are it depends because and that's one of the most common questions we get, like, what's the best investment? I have this much money, or what should I be investing in? And it really depends, because just like every person is different, every person and business's financial house is different. So it really depends on what their goals are, where they are financially, and in each area of their building block. Each area of their financial house. There's six building blocks that make up your financial house. So it's really looking at these different areas of where somebody is, where a business is, what risks they may be facing before you could even determine, before we can even help them determine if investing outside of their business is appropriate. So it's really looking at, you know, what is their cash flow, how much is left over. What's their plan for growing and expanding their business? And then what's their risk level? Like, do they mind putting their money at risk in the market? Or do they not want to lose any money at all? Or do they want to ensure that, you know, they build a certain amount for their family? So it's really like looking at what those goals are and creating a specific plan for each person. You can go into a little bit more specifics on that.
Well, what I'll say is the best investment you make is one in yourself. So that's you're always going to be your best investment, especially an entrepreneur. Your
Right.
skills, your ability to see things, your ability to handle randomity, your ability to handle customers, different environments, your ability to communicate, all of these are high leverage skills. So number one, person make sure they're investing in themselves. Number two, investing in their business. So, an example I always give to people, I'm like, okay, a lot of entrepreneurs come to us and like, I want to buy these stocks. I want to invest in the stock market. I'm like, okay, well, how much are you investing in growing your business? Well, you know, they're not really investing as much as they could in growing their business. So I'm like, okay, do you know what a stock is? They're like, well, yeah, your stock market, all that. I'm like, a stock is ownership in someone else's company. So you have your own company. You're an entrepreneur. It's very different than if you're working for somebody else. But you've got your own business and you have ownership in that business. But you want to take money from your business and invest in ownership in somebody else's business that you don't control and you don't even know who the CEO of the company is. You don't know much about them. So the biggest thing to tell people is make sure you're maximizing the capability of your own business. If you spend this much money on marketing, how much more revenue is that going to create for you in your business? Compared to some stock that may pay you 3, 4, 5%, 10%, or it could go down. Like, dude, if you start thinking about it logically, you're like, yeah, maybe I should actually invest in my own business. Now, I say that as a financial professional because they don't hear it from financial people. The financial people try to get them to invest. The pitch is, come invest with me, come invest with me. I'm like,
Right.
no, dude, invest in your own deal. What's wrong with
Right.
you? So, you know, that's kind of my perspective on this.
I love that. You're absolutely right. The both of you are absolutely right. Like, some financial advisors, they want you to invest in whatever they're selling, right? Whether that's their advice, their services, or whatever they're, if they're selling like a mutual fund, access to a mutual fund, or a variable like life insurance or something. So it sometimes advice like that really dilutes what the important thing is. So thank you for saying that. And this is why I love you guys and I respect you guys a lot, because you'll always sell it like it is. And that also makes me feel a little better because I actually invested in mentorship also and in learning new systems and really paying consultants. For me, consultants are my biggest investments right now. And to just continuously investing in my business so that, because really, you're right, like my business is actually the best investment out there. It's the best cash flowing asset. It is where my expertise lies, you know. And I, if I'm scamming myself, at least I'm scamming myself. And
You have the
not
most
so
control over
much. Yeah,
it.
exactly.
Exactly. It won't hurt me as much. Let's talk about family life, marriage, and being in business, being an entrepreneur, and navigating the money conversation. So I'm particularly interested in this question because I can totally relate. How do you guys coach couples to get on the same money page when one partner is the risk-loving entrepreneur and then the other one craves stability, especially when the recession headlines scream doom?
Well, we talk about it in our book. And actually, your listeners can get a free copy of our book.
Oh, I love
Yeah, if they go to letsfightaboutmoney.com/ebook. And you can get a free digital copy of the book. And we actually break down the different money personalities. There's different money personalities. We all have different experiences, you know, growing up, things that we see, we hear, and it really shapes our beliefs and our habits around money. And Martin, he was more of a spender, and I was much more of a saver. And so we did have some of those money conflicts. We talk about some money conflicts in our book, actually. And when you are able to actually determine what is your money personality, and what are the good things about it, and what are the not so good things about it? You can start to choose, you know, like we just started having conversations, and instead of what I realized is I was trying to get him to spend less and save more, and he was trying to get me to save less and spend more, you know, and so we had to realize that one, what are our goals that we're working towards? You know, are we aligned in those? Well, we want to grow our business. We want to have a happy, successful family. Okay, but we're just thinking about it a little bit differently. And so by opening up that communication, instead of like me trying to make him wrong or him trying to prove himself right, then we started to look at, okay, I know he's gonna want to spend, but is he's not out gambling or drinking, you know, and he's wanting to spend money to grow and expand the business. Okay, well, let me see how that could help us to save more money. And on the other hand, he would see, okay, I know that she is gonna want to save. So, you know, the things that I'm wanting to spend on, let me explain it in a way, or let me look at how could we save more, or how could it help us save more. So it's really about understanding your viewpoints and beliefs, and then also being willing to understand the other person's beliefs and being able to talk about it without blaming each other, making each other wrong, or thinking that we have to think the same way. Like we talked about it before we started a little bit, we both have very different skills. And so my weaknesses are his strengths and vice versa. And so if we only saved and never spent, we probably wouldn't grow and expand our business. And if we only saved and never, I mean, if we only spent and never saved, well, we would go out of business. So having both of our skills, we were able to put it together and actually build something stronger and become wealth creators together by putting those strengths together.
I love that. I love that. And it's funny because, normally it would be the lady in the couple that's like kind of like more of the spender, but I'm definitely the spender. I have this wayward thinking of I don't care about budgeting. I'll just make more money. I don't care about budgeting. I'll just make more money. And I've always kind of approached life like that. Obviously, not ideal. Because no matter how good you are, you know, sometimes the economy will have other plans. So I'm definitely one of my favorite characteristics of my husband really is like how good he is with money and how he's very, very practical about things and how he's also leading these difficult conversations that I don't want to have because I just want to live life, in la la land sometimes. So I love that. So, what are the as a couple, as wealth creators, as you guys, I love that. I love that term, by the way, as you guys mentioned. What daily or maybe weekly money rituals do you recommend to keep entrepreneurial couples feel calm, collaborative, and on track, even when the news cycle screams recession?
So several things we do that's part of our successful actions. One, we look at our money every day. It's a habit in confronting something. Entrepreneurs generally have a higher level of confronting facing something than the average person does. Because you're confronting potential failure, you're confronting risk, you're confronting lots of things when you go and decide to start your own business. Become an entrepreneur, all these different things. You're confronting having to communicate with people, talk to people, speak public, all kinds of things you're confronting that a lot of people don't want to confront. So it takes kind of an individual with a higher confront level to become an entrepreneur. So, but money seems to be an area where even with people who have a very high confront level still find have an issue confronting the subject of money. So just a drill that you do. Is you look at your money every day, and that's a drill. And then you can note the effect it has on you. You can open your bank account and be like, holy shit, dude, I don't like the numbers in there. You can be like, damn, I'm super productive. I love these numbers. Look at what we're doing. It creates some sort of effect. And what you need to note is look at the effect the money's having on you. Are you scared to confront it? Are you afraid? Are you disappointed in yourself when you look at your results? Do you start to invalidate yourself? There's a lot of emotional charge around the subject of money, which is why a lot of people don't confront it. Money, relationships, body, these are some of the biggest buttons all across the planet, which means like, oh man, you push that button, it creates a reaction in people. So when you start looking at your money frequently, what happens is it has less emotional charge on you. You're like, okay, so this is what it is. I'm confronting what's there. That's what I've created. It's either what I wanted to create or what I don't want to create. So let me focus on what I do want to create. So that's something we do. Every week we review our finances, the business and the household. We do that once a week. Thursday's the day we do that. And then also we have daily targets. They're not always the easiest with daily targets, but it's like having a target every day. What's your intention? What's your intention for what you want to happen today? What revenue do you want to collect? What's the intention on that? It may not happen every single day that you collect that, but you keep putting your intention out, and then eventually you get the exchange that you're looking for in terms of money. So those are some of the things that we do regularly. It's very you gotta confront if you can confront money. You can confront a lot of things in life. Money is one of the toughest. I know some very smart, intelligent people, very capable people, and they find it extremely difficult to confront money or financial topics. It's one of the toughest things I've ever seen for that people have trouble confronting.
I will just add to that those daily actions that he's talking about. It's important also that they're all feeding into something bigger. Like we have our ideal scene, our ideal life that we're working towards, and it doesn't matter how many goals and targets that we accomplish, we're always pushing it, we're always expanding and growing, so we have something to work towards. So all those daily activities and targets, they're going into something much bigger, and we're picturing, where we might want to travel, or who we want to help, or what we want to expand in our life, so that in the day-to-day of business and the ups and downs, and you might make your targets and you might not, and to be able to and the finances, they may be exactly where you want, or they may not at all. And so to be able to get you through those turbulent ups and downs, you have this bigger thing that you're pushing towards together.
I like it. I really, really like that. And you guys are absolutely right. Like it's not money is a it's such a weird thing to discuss because first it's a neutral thing, right? It's there. It's just there. It's a resource. You use it, you don't use it. It doesn't matter. It has nothing to do. Sometimes it has nothing to do with like who you are as a person or whatever, but it has more because of how we talk about money and using words like value, worth. Like these are very heavy virtues and very heavy words to use. Like, like the like when you talk about value and worth, that you talk about someone's like self-awareness, and then when you want them to look at themselves and tie their money to their value and worth, that's a very difficult conversation. So I totally get how that can be very uncomfortable. And I think that that's what I experienced as well, growing up poor, being the breadwinner at a very young age, losing my parents early. I think the way that I looked at money was probably kind of negative, even though I was good at making it. But it was like, you know what? I'm just trying to get you because I have to. I don't even enjoy this, for a very long time. And then when I was rid of those responsibilities, that's when I started to actually like enjoy money and kind of fix my relationship with money. I used to teach a money class to Filipinos before, because we grew up in a developing country, and a lot of people have very uncomfortable relationships with money. And one of the activities that I would make my students do is to write a love letter to money. Give it thanks to what it has done for you, apologize for the times you did it wrong, like treat it like a person and write your love letter and make your promises to it and what you're going to do with it if you're blessed and if you're given the chance to be abundant of it and make plans for the future. And it was one of the most emotional and one of the most kind of like life-changing exercises, because people were just like, oh my God, I did a, oh, they're like, I didn't know I had this many feelings about money, and they're not aware of it. They weren't aware of it. So, I like all both of these. I like both of your guys' perspective. Like, make a daily plan. Have especially what you shared, also Chelsea, about having like almost like a vision board, like a couple's vision board, right? Of your goals and what you guys want to do in terms of your personal stuff and stuff for others, like charities you want to give to. And especially because you guys have children, you're setting an example and a role model for them. Can you share with us maybe your top, each of you guys, like a top tip or top lesson for teaching kids about money?
Well, one of the things that I did with my son when I started learning about, how money works, the tools to be successful in life, is I taught him everything I learned. So I was reading, like I read Think and Grow Rich. That was his bedtime story when he was like 5 years old. And Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, I read that book, and that was his bedtime story. He read that many times. He would come to us with to conferences. He came to us. Came with us to Grant Cardone events, and he would start doing his own, he would start sharing what he was teaching. So basically, like the things that I was implementing in my life, I didn't wait until he was older. Like I taught him the life lessons as I learned them. And when it came to money, one of the things that I learned is kids don't really know how much things cost. So they have a hard time understanding the value of money or what it takes to get the money to buy the things that they want. So we told our son at a very young age, look, we're going to buy you your necessities. You have a budget for your clothes and your shoes. Anything beyond that, or beyond like birthdays and special occasions, extra toys or games or things that you want, or if you want to go above your clothing and shoes budget, it's up to you to figure it out. So he started selling some of his old toys. He started selling some snacks. He came into our office and asked people, "Hey, what snacks would you buy for me?" It went into this business, and he would share on social media about it. Then people started asking, "Well, what do you do with your business?" So then he made a kids' money system of like teaching kids good money habits. So it's like learning, and I would take him to the store, and he would pick, he would take his money. And he would pick out the things that he wants to buy. And he realized, like, oh, wow, Legos are expensive. Or, oh, wow, I didn't know things cost. Oh, and there's tax. So it's like these things that we didn't really learn until you start like adulting or buying things on your own and paying bills. And so seeing him learn those things and be able to learn what it takes to earn the money and then making the decision about spending the money, it really helped him to develop good money habits at a young age.
Yeah, that's super useful. Yeah, Martin, anything to add?
Well, your kids watch what you do. They listen, they pay attention. One rule we have, we have discussion about money, but you never want to put speak non-survival things in front of your kids. Like, we can't afford this, we don't have the money. Just negative, you don't want to say negative things about money, because what people do is they pick up things in the environment. The way your money personality develops is because of the environment you were in. And so that environment that person was in, they make certain decisions based on that environment they're in. And then if they're in an environment where their parents are arguing and saying, "We can't afford this. Do you know how much that costs?" Oh, something negative about money, they're going to have negative viewpoints on money. So you've got to really then make sure you're not having those types of discussions in front of your kids. You always want to make sure your kids are productive. They're watching you and they're paying attention to what you do. And you just never want to. And they should be aware. Kids are very intuitive. You should not hide things from them in a sense of like what's going on, but not burden them with something. So like, if you're working hard, like the thing, like sometimes I'll be working, I'll be on my computer, and our son would want to come and play when he was younger, and then he had to understand that we were working, and that's me working to bring in money to take care of the family. So once he starts to make that connection, then they start to really understand, okay, so I got to be productive, and that's how you get money, and this is what you do. But it's all from a very survival point of view, positive, that sort of thing. People shouldn't have negative views on money, especially from their parents.
Yeah, I like that point because, especially when you grow up poor, you've only really seen your parents make money out of necessity, and they don't seem to be happy doing it. They could be happy people, but I've seen my dad just come home from work like tired and just drained, and he loved coming home because that was his moment of relaxation. And he had a great relationship with my mom until the end, and it was super nice for me as a role model. But in terms of like how I observed my dad, I related work, or I linked work to something that was just like negative, and you just have to do it. And maybe that's why I never had a job, really. I went straight into business right out of college. Also, I would never ever follow a dress code anyway. I was unemployable, as they say. But I think now, looking back and listening to you guys, it made me realize a lot of things in my childhood. And definitely super funny about your guys' point about kids never really knowing what things cost, or it's so stupid. Like, stupid, and I mean stupid as in it's funny stupid, not stupid, dumb stupid. But I remember this memory as a child when I was so mad at my parents about something, maybe like they want me to sleep at a certain time. I forgot what it was, something super shallow, but I got so mad, and then I started planning to run away from home. And then I started saving money. I started saving my allowance. I was so mad at my mom, like, I'm gonna run away from home. I'm just gonna make it work. I'm gonna just offer to like take weeds out of people's gardens, for a little fee. It was so funny and stupid. And then I think I had enough money to like feed me for 3 days, and that's when I started to re really gain the courage. And I'm like, oh, I'm leaving right now. I'm gonna start. Started packing up. Oh my gosh, this was so funny. I was like in third grade, and then I started packing up, and then I showed sister my money. Oh, so much money. And then I was like, do you want to come with me? Do you? Because our parents, they always tell us what to do. We don't have freedom. It was so funny. I was like a little rebel. Obviously, it never happened because I realized I didn't know how to commute. I didn't know how to take public transportation because I only did it with my mom. And so anyway, that didn't happen, but I just remembered my conviction that I was just like, I'm ready for life, but it was so stupid. But yeah, navigating that money conversation with your kids is pretty special. But a different angle for entrepreneurs also is navigating the money conversation with their employees. So when times are hard, a lot of entrepreneurs will have to have that conversation with their employees and tell them like, hey, times are hard. I'm doing my best right now. What is your advice for entrepreneurs so that they can have that conversation without basically telling them or making their employees feel scared that they might close or that, they might get laid off or something like that? What is the best way to approach this conversation?
Well, there's one thing we do in our business, which is we're very transparent. We keep statistics in our business. So we run our business off something called the Hubbard College of Administration Management System. And part of that whole management system is you keep stats in your business. So we have a section where there's the gross income. There's a graph for the gross income. Everybody knows how much money the business makes. Everybody's got stats. Everybody who works with us has stats that they keep. Either you're producing and you're up stat, or you're flat, or you're down stat. Okay, and there's different ways we handle different of those conditions. So somebody can go in, they would go into the lunch area, and there's our stats all posted up. So you can see if this are the stats going up, are the stats flat, is the stats going down. So we regularly we have meetings and talk about the state of the company. How well are we doing as a group? And part of it is employees have to feel like there's a greater purpose behind what they're doing for work than just getting the paycheck. You have to, in many ways, make it a group and then make it a team. Everybody's, we're advocating for this team and we're on this team together so that if, you face tough economic times and your gross income goes down, or it takes longer for people to buy, or your sales are down, or something like that, that everybody kind of pitches in together to help to move the stats up. That everybody knows they're part of the team and part of the group. So you can really, when people feel like they're part of something, they don't feel like, oh, you don't want to pay us more, or whatever the person might have. If somebody's like that, either they don't feel like they're part of a team, or they're just somebody that shouldn't be part of your group. And then maybe they're not right for your company. But that's the way we approach, those tough conversations. You don't want to burden the employees, but you want them to see the what's happening in the company and how well the company's doing.
And another thing I'll add that really helps for business owners to help employees really focus on helping the business grow is as much as you can to tie income to performance, to production. So, you may have, like, we've had a base salary, and then we tie their statistics, like Martin said, they keep their statistics, and then based on their statistics, if they're up, then they get bonuses or they get commission or whatever the case is, so that they know that the better they perform in their position, the more that they're going to get paid. And that ultimately helps the business increase the revenue, which helps support that pay as well.
Yeah, I like that because it's like it's not a matter of like we are a team, we're gonna go down together, but it's a matter of we are a team, so we can fight this together, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody can really control the economy. And when the economy is down, even something as simple as the price of eggs will affect the owner to the virtual assistant,
Yeah.
And this is why I also I love your guys' point about like making it neutral, have statistics, have numbers speak instead of you having to remind them that, this is what it looks like. And the other thing that I would add also as a professional in the outsourcing industry is it's really super important to get people in their roles to be correct. So one of the mistakes that I see a lot of my previous clients or maybe prospects before people start working with us is they would have these jumbled roles about virtual assistants in general, and they will just give them tasks and they have no clear outcome or no clear accountability. And so a virtual assistant with that title could actually be doing social media, and one is called a virtual assistant, but they could actually be doing lead generation. So I think also management-wise, if the roles are more clear, then they can see what their contribution is to the business better, and then they can plan accordingly on how they can help the owner in navigating this, this economic downturn, basically, because each person can definitely have their own contribution. The social media person can maybe put out more offers, or announce more offers, instead of just posting branding stuff. The lead gen person can call more people. The podcast person can maybe pitch you to more podcasts so that you can talk about your brand more. So there's also a lot of benefit into keeping the house in order operationally, so that in times of economic downturn, each role is now like locked in and they know how to contribute to the business. So thank you for sharing that. Let's talk about how you guys help entrepreneurs. So I know that I have shared what you guys do at your business and how you guys have started this business, M Wealth Group. It's a financial consulting, investment, and insurance agency. What are some of your maybe three products that really help entrepreneurs the most?
So there are a few things entrepreneurs run into, like risks. The biggest thing is we help people understand what risks they're under. A lot of times when you're not looking at something, you don't see, it's like blind spots. It's very clear for me to see it because I've been looking at, this is something we've done for a long time. So it's very easy for me to look at a business, look at the finances of a household. I've looked at thousands. I've done over 10,000 meetings where we looked at people's finances, looked at the business finances just in our career. So it's very easy for me to spot what I call out points, something that is out that should be there but is not, or something that's missing, or something that's not correct. But sometimes it's very hard for the person whose finances it is to spot those things. And so one of the biggest things we do is help people understand what risks, the economy shifts, what risks are you under? For if that happens, if your sales cycle is longer, what risks does that mean? How do you make sure something else is going to be handled so that you can have enough of a buffer for absorbing whatever that is? So that's one of the biggest things that we do is help them identify what are the overall risks in their business, in their finances that they're not spotting, and what to do about it. Then as far as like implementing on specific things to do about it, there's different financial products that's offered that they might need. We do a lot of, we have an insurance agency, so we do a lot of life insurance policies. For a lot of entrepreneurs, their personal finances have to be created by themselves. Like somebody who goes as an employee, maybe their employee gives them some insurance coverage and things like that, or a retirement plan. But when you're an entrepreneur, you have to kind of put these things together on your own. So life insurance is a huge part of something that's often a blind spot for entrepreneurs. And because if the business is taking care of your household and you don't have life insurance and the business goes away, or you pass away and the business goes away because you're no longer there, how is the family going to be taken care of? So that's an important part. Also, there's some life insurance policies that can pay you while you're still living if you got sick or hurt. So there was one time this entrepreneurial guy, he didn't have any life insurance, he developed cancer, and then that sidelined his business. He just started a business, kind of getting things rolling, he got developed cancer. And then he had to like take some time away from running the business, and everything, the stats and everything started crashing in the business. So there's life insurance policies that can pay you while you're living. In his case, that would have paid money to him. That could have found somebody competent, give him a signing bonus to bring somebody over that could help run things in the meantime. That could help his finances, his personal finances. So there's lots of different things like that. We help people create a plan. There's a few things that a lot of people are missing. One, they don't operate with a plan, so they don't have a, like a written plan. Number two, if they have a written plan, they don't use it. So like, oh yeah, I wrote a plan some time ago, I don't use it. And number three, even if they have a written plan and a very few of them actually use it, number three, they don't evaluate to see, am I producing the things on this plan? Am I getting the outcome of this plan? A very, very tiny, 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 small, less than 1% of people actually have a written plan, use it regularly, and then have stats to see, am I producing in the real world what this plan says? And so those are all the kinds of things we help entrepreneurs with. We do a lot of consulting, things like that, to make sure that they're putting in the right systems in their businesses, they're tracking things, they're able to look at their business externally and find out what are the right levers to pull in their business to get things moving, the key things that they need to move in a business.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, guys, definitely check out what Martin and Chelsea got going on. I also linked the ebook. Everyone gets a free copy of their ebook. I 100% recommend it. Let's Fight About Money. Honestly, even if you're single, Read it so that you can also speak about and learn about principles that will be useful when you get into a relationship. And of course, there's two very important relationships to have here. One is with your spouse or your family or whatever, and the other one is also with your team. We've covered all of that conversations, plus the conversations that you need to have with yourself to really get to know what the next move for you is in terms of investing, building your fund. And also, I want to recommend another episode in this podcast. Please check my episode with Melissa Friedman. We talked about discovering your financial personality, which assesses like your risk appetite, what your lifestyle is like. And it's really kind of the first inward way of assessing what kind of investments you should take. I 100% recommend that episode as well. After you listen to this episode, it's such a great thing also to think about. So, Martin and Chelsea, thank you so much for being here. You guys have shared a lot of really important information. Thank you so much. I feel like I scammed you into a free consult. I know that people would love to know how they can follow you, your work. Where are you guys hanging out on social media?
So I'm at on all social media platforms. I'm at one Martin Matthews. So just a number one, followed by my first and last name, one Martin Matthews.
And I'm one Chelsea Matthews.
Oh yeah, there's only one of you guys. So I'll also link your guys' profiles in the show notes so people can follow you. Thank you so much for being here. I've had such a great conversation. I'm sure the community has learned a lot from you guys. So thank you.
Thank you
Thanks,
so much for
Carla. Thanks
having
for having
us.
us.
All right. Have a good one. And to everyone listening, see you next week for another episode of None of Your Business. Bye.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.